Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.
Happy New Year, or should that be Appy New Year, from Absolutely Intercultural, the podcast about all things intercultural. My name's Anne Fox, and this podcast is coming to you from Denmark. This is show number 126, the first one of 2011, or 2011 as I should probably start to call it. So why Appy New Year? Well, in this show, I'll be introducing you to three so-called apps which could help you in your efforts to understand more about intercultural communication. This is the first time I'm making a show after learning about our win in the European Podcast Awards for 2010. We won in the non-profit category, and I just want to add my thanks to all those of you who voted for us, and also to all those of you who have contributed to the show by speaking with me and Laurent over the years. Without you as our conversation partners, this podcast would be impossible. Our main guest today is Evan Frendo, a Briton based in Germany who teaches English in the workplace, as well as being a teacher trainer. We'll find out why small talk is important, and also some of the challenges in teaching it.
And I asked the people in the class to do a quick role play where they would get to know the other person. And these two factory workers who, you know, were in the mid-50s, looked at me and said, "But we've known each other for 30 years. What do you want us to talk about?"
We'll also hear more from Carol, the Chinese student who's studying for a year in South Korea, about what she'll do with her Korean back in China, and about the national pride of the South Koreans. And finally, we'll also be returning to Samuel in the United States, but originally from Kenya, and hear about the ways in which he's had to adapt while in the US. So let's begin the show with our segment, Absolutely Trivial. The topic of small talk is often part of a language course, though not a very important one. But when I talked to Evan Frendo in Germany, I discovered that small talk is actually a very important building block of working relationships.
As I understand it, people who research language and communication in the workplace are finding that relationship building is perhaps much more important than we thought, say, 20 years ago. And so the whole idea of communication without relationship building doesn't really work. This idea of building rapport with your customer, your client, your partner, your business partner, whoever it is, it may be internal, it may be external. So small talk, I think, plays a very important role in any language training, intercultural training. But I'm not talking about small talk in the sense of killing time talking about the weather. Mm. Of course, that is one type of phatic communication. But what I'm talking about is a sort of small talk where, for example, when you're in a meeting and you're waiting for the meeting to start, you turn around to the person next to you and discuss workplace topics, which are not necessarily the aim of that particular meeting. So the meeting may be about project XYZ, but you speak about, oh, how's it going in, I don't know, Mexico at the moment. What's happening with the project in Mexico? So people use small talk in companies to catch up about business topics. And in doing so, they're building the relationship between themselves. But it's a continuum. I see the whole relationship building thing as a continuum between, at one end, very emphatic communication in other words, just building this relationship. The sort of thing you would say when you walk past somebody in the corridor. If you said, "Hi, how's it going?" and the other person ignored you, that would cause a problem in your relationship, perhaps. But you're not actually asking for information. You're not saying, "Hi, how's it going? Please give me a step-by-step account of everything you've been doing." It's the same as saying, "How are you?" You don't really want a medical analysis of how somebody's health is. You are just making contact with a person, and you expect the same back. So that's one end of this relationship-building type language. And at the other end is, as I say, this very focused workplace-related relationship-building small talk, which is still small talk because it's not about the topic at hand, but it helps the relationship building to occur.
How do you help somebody with that? I mean, do you get them to, for example, find out information about the company beforehand, or what else can you do?
This is really a really difficult thing I've found, because small talk requires a context and requires a relationship to exist between people. And so what you talk about and how you talk about it depends very much on who you're talking to and the context you're in, the situation you're in. Now, the problem is that when you're in the classroom, you're in a completely, I wouldn't say artificial context, because it's not artificial, people are there for a reason, but it's a different context to the one they have, they might be required to deal with in a real situation. I'll give you an example. I had a couple of factory workers I was training a few years ago, and they were fairly low-level English speakers, and we were doing some small talk, and we were practicing the idea of getting to know you. And I asked the people in the class to do a quick role play where they would get to know the other person. And these two factory workers who, you know, were in the mid-50s looked at me and said, but we've known each other for 30 years. What do you want us to talk about? And that was exactly the crux of the problem that you've just raised. How do you, in the classroom, create a situation where you are practicing the language they have to practice with people who aren't in the language, in the classroom? You can only do it by role play and simulation, I think, but it's very difficult to change this mindset to say, okay, you really are somebody else and pretend you are somebody else, because the context isn't really there. Maybe it's too artificial. It's not authentic.
You'll find links to Evan's blog and his latest book on our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com. And we'll be hearing more from Evan later in the show. You may remember that in my last show, we found out about South Korea from a Chinese perspective when I spoke with Carol, who's doing a year study exchange there. What also interested me was how she was going to use Korean when she went back to China. So, is Korean absolutely useful to Chinese people?
Just in our class, I think. But outside class, we do not have this kind of opportunity.
But do you think you might be able to use it maybe in business?
Yes. I think maybe. But for us now, talking to Korean frequently is a little bit difficult. But when it comes to understanding, I think we can understand most of the Korean when they're talking. At least we will know what they are talking about.
Is it normal when you go to a Chinese university to spend some time in a foreign university?
My university is the first university in Jiangsu province to start the Korean major. So our opportunities to study abroad is, there are many opportunities for us to study abroad. So, many of our students go abroad to study Korean, but actually for other majors, other languages, the opportunity will be fewer.
So do you have an idea about what you are going to do when you graduate?
Actually, my major are English and Korean, and I think I will continue my study on English or Korean, not just go to work after graduate.
And you mentioned that you were staying in an international dormitory. So what other nationalities are you meeting there?
Actually, many students are Chinese, and others coming from America, and Bangladesh, and Japan, and Mongolia, also German, yeah.
Yeah?
Five students, yeah.
Oh, you have German students too?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was going to say that European students tend to choose internships or exchanges within Europe. Would you recommend European students to do an exchange in Korea?
China. In Korea?
Well, Korea and China, for that matter.
Yeah, actually, my university have a lot of Korean students because they want to learn Chinese, so they come to China to learn Chinese in my university, but the campus, but our campus is different, so we do not have opportunity to communicate with them. And Korean students will got at least many more opportunity to study abroad than our Chinese.
Mm.
Yeah, this is my experience and feeling. For foreigners, for Europeans, for Americans, I think the Europeans and Americans here are more than in China.
And do you think they are enjoying their time in Korea?
Yeah, I think, in my opinion, I think they enjoy quite much. Just the food or diet they do not used to eat, I think, like us.
This is what is coming over strongly to me, is that the food is very different. Yeah, both what it is and how much it costs and how it's prepared and so on. Is there anything else that surprised you when you arrived in Korea?
Surprised me is, I think, the proud of their the people, the Korean people, they're proud of their nation is quite strong than I think.
Yeah.
When I go to the market and buy some vegetables and meat with my classmate, they ask me, they saw we are Chinese, they always ask us, do you think China is better or Korea is better?
Oh.
I think how to compare it. Compare with China, Korea is so small. I wanted to say, but in front of them, I think both of them are good, but they are proud of Korean, but they still said we think Korean is better, Korea is better, right? maybe. Yeah, so really they're proud of their nation, it's really strong.
Thanks again to Carol, who got in touch with us to tell us about her Korean experiences. She certainly showed herself to be adaptable when faced with a sensitive intercultural situation. And adaptability is something which Kenyan teacher Samuel Osamba still needs to practice, even though he's been in the USA for over 20 years now. Let's hear how absolutely adaptable he needs to be in the classroom.
One of the things you mentioned was it being a good idea to understand your own culture. Have you experienced that at all, that you discovered certain things about your own culture after going away from it?
Yes, I have. And I think that I was, after reading your blog, I did some sort of reflection. And it caught my attention that sometimes, you know, I focus on how I can pay attention or make sure that, for example, in my classroom, make sure that my lessons, as I teach my lessons, that I adhere to my students' culture so that I can reach them. I sometimes forget how my own culture may be affecting what I'm doing in the classroom.
I'm wondering how much you've accommodated. For example, here, coming to Denmark, everything starts earlier in the day. And I must say that I'm not very good at getting up early in the morning, so I still feel it. still feel the difference that everything starts earlier in the day. But have you accustomed yourself to the rhythm in the U.S.?
Yes, I have. And otherwise, I would not have kept my job as long as I have, which I've been here for 14 years. But when I go home or when we are going to our churches, African churches, or when we are going to attend African meetings, then we conduct business just as we did back home, as though we don't know the concept of time. And I thought that, well, someone who may be doing business with us may perhaps need to understand that, know that, and find a way to navigate through it.
So what you're saying then is that you're flexible according to the situation.
Right. I am flexible in the sense that when I know that I'm going to my job, and this is a job where I need to be at work by 7:30 and leave at 3:30 or 4, then I do that. I do that to keep the job. But then when I'm in a different environment where, you know, I'm not going to lose a job or I'm not under some sort of contractual agreement, then, you know, I find myself sometimes slacking off and falling back to, you know, to my normal routine as far as time is concerned. You know, different sign languages gestures or body languages may mean different things to different cultures, in different cultures. So I think that that is also relevant in the sense that if I'm sitting across the table talking to someone from a different culture, it may be important for me to have a clue, a little insight on what their hand signs and gestures may mean. For example, if I'm in a classroom and I have a student from Asia or Africa, if I ask a question and the student is answering the question looking down, I'm aware that in Asia and in Africa, that's a sign of respect because teachers are supposed to be respected, and so you don't look at them in the eye. But an American student would think about it differently because in America, you when you look at the teacher in the eye, it's a sign of respect, and it's also a sign that you're being truthful.
Maybe I could tell you that a very long time ago, I had a student from Togo, and he told me this about not looking the teacher in the eye. And I'm not very tall, and he was exceedingly tall, and I wondered, how could you do this? How would that work in that situation?
Right.
As a teacher, I'm very impressed with the website called listenandwrite.com, in which language learners can do dictation exercises around short audio snippets, often from YouTube videos or Voice of America broadcasts. Since we sometimes get asked for transcripts, I wondered if we could combine the two and upload short extracts from the show to Listen and Write for you to work with if you're a language learner. So the first one features the first part of Evan Frendo's segment about small talk, which we heard earlier. And you can find the exact link for this Listen and Write exercise on our blog. You can do the dictation at several levels. But am I right in thinking that culture and language are inextricably mixed? I've recently read a blog post by a respected English teacher who said that he didn't see any reason to include intercultural communication in his English classes. Since Evan Frendo includes a great deal of intercultural communication in his classes, I asked him for his view. Is it absolutely essential in language teaching?
I think it really depends how you see your role as a language teacher or a business English teacher or trainer or whatever you call yourself. The communicative language teaching approach, which has been around for, 20-odd years, has always had a cultural element because it's about communication, not about language. But if you see yourself as a language teacher and focus on the linguistic elements of communication, then probably you're going to say, well, intercultural communication isn't part of it. But if you see yourself as teaching communication and helping your students, your clients, whatever you call them, to communicate, then I think an intercultural, sociocultural, sociolinguistic aspect cannot be ignored because it's part and parcel of communication. And what I always say on my teacher training courses is that every one of our students who uses English uses it in an intercultural context.
After speaking with Evan, I signed up to his Twitter feed and discovered a link he had posted about a language app. Apps are small programs that you can download to your mobile phone, tablet, or MP3 player. There are thousands of them, and I suddenly became curious whether there were any to do with intercultural communication. So in this final segment, we'll go absolutely mobile, and I hope you heard my pronunciation there. So the first app is called WordLens and works by translating any sign that you photograph with your phone or your iPod Touch. At the moment, the only language pair available is English and Spanish. So this means that you can photograph a Spanish sign and get an English translation or vice versa. Useful for restaurant menus, I would imagine. The catch here, though, is that although the app is free, you have to buy the dictionary. But when it works, it's like magic. The second app I found was called Fasten Seat Belts, and this gives you snippets of information about different cultures, both in text format and in the form of short videos. Now, this one is completely free. The first edition was a collection of do's and don'ts for European countries, and the second edition now covers a range of Asian countries. The third app I found for you is called Cultural GPS and allows you to see the different Hofstede profiles for 98 different countries in the free version. In the pro version, which costs $19, I think, you can create your own personal cultural profile and compare it to any one of the 98 countries. Or compare pairs of countries to highlight differences and similarities. This is the one I like the most, and I'd be really interested to find out what you think about it. All in all, I think that this was an interesting little project, but I've come to the conclusion that these apps can only help with simplistic culture specifics and don't really help with the more rewarding culture general aspects of intercultural communication. But maybe you know of some other interesting apps. If so, then do tell us about it in a comment on our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com or send us an email. We'd also be very happy if you recorded something for us to include in the show. Well, that's it for this show. The next show will be coming to you from Germany on January the 21st with Laurent Borgmann. So until then, stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.